Hello and welcome to Brain Trust Live number 89.
This week on the podcast, Nelson Mandela dies, leaving the GOP scrambling to unsay all the mean things they've said about him in the past.
And the GOP is finally asking their stodgy, misogynistic candidates to think it, not say it, in their races against women.
The latest jobs report shows potentially fake gains in employment, potentially fake losses in Black Friday enthusiasm.
And the folks who brought you the weekend band together with the folks who brought you your fries to combat underemployment and, by extension, obesity.
Freezing weather leads to all manner of hilarious SoCal weather reports, also potentially a national famine.
And this week's The Sound of Music on NBC was definitely not one of our favorite things.
Stay tuned for all this and more.
This is Brain Trust Live. Hey guys, I'm Brent.
I'm Lila, and you can find us on the internet at www.braintrustlive.com. You can find us on Twitter.
Yep.
We actually need you to find us on Twitter today because Brent just dropped his phone into the toilet.
And tell me what to do, people.
We're trying to figure out what to do.
I was looking online because I was like, put it in rice immediately. And then I was looking at how long I have to do that, and it says 24 hours, and that's not happening.
It's not feasible.
I need a fix. It's going to take about... until the end of this podcast,
right.
At which point it will be too late for the tweet, so I don't know why we're asking, but no, I'm just kidding. I'll do it again.
Right.
I'm constantly dropping my phone in terrible places.
That's true.
So I once dropped it down an elevator shaft years ago. Not my iPhone, thankfully.
No. That was back in your BlackBerry days.
Before the iPhone. It was a Pearl. Pearl days.
When I first met Brent, he had like a series of BlackBerry Pearls.
I was obsessed with my BlackBerry Pearl. Speaking of BlackBerries, this has nothing to do with it. Well, it has something to do with BlackBerries, but nothing to do with our podcast generally, but... Ryan Seacrest just, like, pumped, like, $1 million into this, like, new invention, which is basically the snap-on thing to your iPhone that makes your keyboard like a BlackBerry keyboard.
Oh.
Yes.
Oh, interesting.
Because he is sort of, like, known for carrying his iPhone and his BlackBerry, because he does all of his emailing purposes.
It.
No, nobody can.
Right.
It's
You have to have teeny tiny hands.
I was going to say, you're the only, basically, living person that can type on that fucking keyboard. One of my good friends just switched over from his Samsung Galaxy to his first iPhone, and I was like, you're going to love it, but you can't type on it.
Right.
You just
forget
you can't.
About it. You're not going to be sending any emails.
You're going to have to just mentally get over it before it starts frustrating you.
Yeah.
Or else you drive yourself bonkers.
No, it's true.
So anyway, Ryan Seacrest.
Who knew?
Tech guru. Now. Anyway.
In any case, we also want to thank Pavel Sabek. We hope we're saying that right.
We're not, probably.
For the donation.
Pavel, we're saying right, but...
We self-fund this entire podcast, but we do have a donation link on our website.
That we were convinced that,
that no one cared about.
Well,
so, we cared.
We cared greatly about it.
We cared greatly.
And someone else finally decided to care, so thank you.
Thank you, yeah.
The rest of you listeners out there, it's right on braintrustlive.com.
So easy to find.
PayPal, could not be easier.
Yeah. We're driving ourselves into the poorhouse producing this podcast, so we would appreciate any financial support. Or, you know, we will consider your tweets for Brent on how to save his phone monetary support as well.
Right, because I don't want to have to buy a new
one.
Yeah.
So, in any case, there wasn't a ton of political news this week, but there was a major loss, because Nelson Mandela, after a long illness, finally passed away this week.
Yeah, he was 95 years old, and, you know, he'd been sick for a long time. In fact, I think that we sort of, at one point, months ago, said...
That his death was imminent, basically.
I was going to say, I think we went on the podcast, and we were like, it's Sunday, you may be listening to this, and he may be dead. And then that was, I think, probably 6 months ago.
Yeah, that was a long
time
ago.
So he's been, you know, sick off and on for a long time. He's been having really bad lung infections.
Yeah.
He's been in and out of the hospital, so...
Also, there was that weird moment where the Elder Bush's people preemptively...
thought that he was dead.
Thought that he was dead and published their memorial to him.
Oops.
And then had to be like, oh, no, sorry, mistake.
Right. Well, they...
We were just prepping it.
Yeah.
Which, I guess, we were all prepping it because,
yeah.
Because it seemed like months ago this was about to happen. But it's... There's been a tremendous amount of sort of worldwide outpouring of grief.
Yeah, I mean, it really sort of, you know, I mean, he's such a, you know, huge figure on so many levels.
On so many levels. So, he's also sort of like symbolically, I think, our only living like real like civil rights hero that we would memorialize in the way that we memorialize like a Martin Luther King or somebody like that.
Exactly.
Because... Apartheid in South Africa is the most recent example of, like, institutionalized racism that was, like, written into the, you know, the law of a country.
Yeah. But he's definitely going to be greatly missed. I thought The Onion did such a great job. Yes. I don't know if we read that. Like, I love it when they sort of like take a tragic event like this and really sort of like, because they were basically like, he's now the only politician that will be like missed by everyone, basically.
Right.
But like
ever.
They wrote it ever. Yeah, exactly.
And there are like, there are no contenders currently for being the next one.
Right, exactly. And it's true. Nobody else could die and have sort of like the amount of, you know, compassion sort of, throughout the world that is sort of going on now.
It's sort of an interesting thing because he was sort of unabashedly a left-wing figure, very pro-union. We're going to talk in a little bit about his
healthcare
vehemently
against
thoughts.
The Iraq War.
Very
and
against
spoke
the
about
Iraq
it in
War.
Very strong ways.
And so it's sort of interesting because, I mean, he's the first black president of South Africa. He was a like major freedom fighter. Like, you can't, even Republicans have to sort of
play the game at this moment. And that's where the you know, the sympathy, I think, you know, for his death and, you know, is coming from more so than some of his political beliefs. It's obviously sort of like helping to, you know,
yes.
to end institutional racism in South Africa and, you know, yes. some of the civil rights things that he stood for, as opposed to his political beliefs, which Republicans
are not
don't agree with.
Well,
we're
and interestingly,
get to in
there
bit.
Have been some interesting sort of pushback pieces in various news sources. I read an op-ed in The Times that was about some of his political rivals in South Africa. Because there was sort of, I mean, as is the case with any sort of massive political figure, there was a sort of minor movement in South Africa that was trying to bring to light some of the like cronyism and corruption that his regime had sort of institutionalized as well. I mean, mm-hmm. he was a guy from sort of like a tribal background, and so there was a lot of cronyism in his administration, which is the case in any administration ultimately, but there has been an interesting amount of kind of like sensitive pushback, I would say. I haven't
yes.
seen anything outrageous, but it's interesting because this was, you know, because he was the president of South Africa, we didn't really have a stake in his sort of like the minor issues of his with his regime,
right,
or anything like that. I mean, we didn't really think about them because we were just like, oh good, South Africa stopped being as racist, that's good news.
Yep.
We can stop having sanctions. But it's sort of interesting to hear about some of the like political infighting. It's sort of how I imagine it would be if, you know, well, it's sort of like with the JFK assassination or something like that. On the outside, from the outside, that looks like an event that was just sort of like broadly tragic. But I'm sure at the time there were people that were like, well, he wasn't doing anything good for the nation anyway. And then
right,
there were
exactly.
people that were like, well, he
yeah.
was, you know, he was good, but he could have been better, and, you know, like,
yeah.
all of the things that you hear about any politician.
Right. And a lot of the Republicans who have been memorializing him have not always been on
no.
Team Mandela.
Well, this whole situation has brought some interesting historical memories to
yes.
light. You may not realize that Nelson Mandela was actually on the terrorist watch list well into the 2000s.
Yeah.
Condoleezza Rice finally removed him in 2008.
Though. Yeah.
He was there through the entire since the 80s. He was there through the entire Clinton administration.
Yeah, well, and I mean, when he was in prison for 27 years, I mean, he was the leader of the ANC, the African National Congress, and
that was considered a terrorist organization.
And the United States Congress, even when Dick Cheney was in there in 86, voted against the Comprehensive Anti-Apartheid Act because it's sort of
they actually passed the act.
Well,
they
right.
there were a bunch of GOP people that voted against it.
Right. And Reagan did not sign it, and they had to re-vote on it to
yeah.
Overcome a presidential veto.
Yeah.
And it was because it wasn't because they were necessarily against apartheid, it was because it sort of like,
or
you know, it was
apartheid.
Or for apartheid, excuse me. It was because they didn't like the ANC.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, it's sort of interesting when these things come full circle, because it's sort of how, you know, it's what happens in any country that is sort of fighting for regime change. We spend a while hating them, then we get on board once it's already happened.
Sure.
And then we're sort of, you know, but at the time we had sanctions against South Africa. It's considered one of the few examples of sanctions actually working. And that's partially because it was a relatively wealthy nation that had sort of European-ish contacts.
Sure.
And so it wasn't like we were just sort of like driving an already poor nation into the poorhouse. We were just sort of putting pressure on a nation that was being run by rich white people. But in any case, it's been interesting to listen to how American politicians have reacted to this, given that many of them have been in office since they hated him.
Right, exactly.
And there's going to be, like, a big state funeral and stuff like that. There was a big controversy a while ago because I think his grandson or somebody had, like, pre-sold the TV rights to his...
Well, right. They've basically had... They've had his funeral planned
for
years.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But it's going to be a big, like, 10-day hoopla situation. And, I mean, it has been sort of heartwarming to see, like, there's been gatherings in South Africa that are more diverse than you imagine much of what happens in South Africa is.
Right.
Because South Africa is still a nation where, like, most of the black people live in what are essentially, like, reservations.
Yeah.
I mean, it's not even as sort of integrated as the U.S.
Right.
But, so it's been sort of heartwarming to see that going on.
What's not been heartwarming see are some of the Republican supporters and constituents taking to their senator and congresspeople's Facebook pages. Because basically we saw all of the, you know, Republicans, well, and Democrats too, but memorializing him on their Facebook page and releasing statements and things like that. And the comment sections were maybe what you would think would be, or maybe worse. I don't know what you would think, but the comment sections are always where you get the crazies. But anyway, they came out for this. The crazies came out.
Facebook is a really effective way of getting to your congressperson because it's a public forum.
Yeah, you told me that, actually.
My mom told me that, as you might imagine. My mom is the one who's famous for all of these strategies. But yeah, it's a really sort of great way to embarrass your congressperson, especially if you're stupid. It's a great way to embarrass your congressperson. But it's because it's public and it's a private message at the same time.
Yeah, it's a great way to embarrass yourself and your congressperson, which is
what these people were up to.
Yeah, exactly.
If you're smart, it's a great way to embarrass your congressperson. If you're not, it's a great way to embarrass yourself.
Right. So we'll give you some examples because some of them are pretty solid.
Priceless.
So on Ted Cruz's Facebook page, one of the comments was, "Why don't all you Mandela lovers head on over to South Africa and see what's going on now that Mandela's people have control of the nation? Experience what life is really like, especially if you're white."
Ooh.
Oh my.
The famous
reverse
claims.
Reverse apartheid.
Reverse racism is a real popular.
Yes. Eric Cantor's, "No, he was a terrorist and a communist," spelled incorrectly. Yes. Study your history.
You know what? Study your spelling.
Yeah, exactly. Also on Eric Cantor's, "The mass murderer Mandela is finally dead. While he did some statesman-like things," oh good, "as president in the 1990s, he and his animal of a wife were mass murderers and torturers."
Man.
Wow.
Boy, that's...
Wow.
That's something.
John Boehner's, "John, from your comp..." I love John.
Yeah. Hey, John. Well, that's... No, actually, let's use this opportunity to recommend that people refer to their congresspeople that way. I do that all the time. It's an effective way to make them remember that
they work for you. You call them whatever the hell you want.
Exactly. I don't know if it's the honorable John Boehner. Like, no, he's not honorable.
Yeah, exactly. So it says, "John, from your comments, does it mean you support communism and the killing of white people?"
Good question.
Mm-hmm. Yes. Marco Rubio's has had some quality ones.
Yes.
"For someone whose family fled communism, fled the very things that Mandela stood for, I am sad to see you revere this man." And this is the best one, I think, anyway. "He was a communist terrorist man."
That's what he was.
Communist terrorist
man. The old communist terrorist.
Not a communist terrorist.
Well, Marco Rubio's constituents must be really furious because Nelson Mandela refused to denounce Fidel Castro.
I know, exactly.
Which is why a lot of Republicans don't like him.
Yeah.
And that's why all these communism charges. Obviously, he wasn't a communist. He was a sort of nationalist figure who was the president of a democracy.
Right.
So that's a crazy thing. But it's the kind of thing you say to a progressive figure in politics when they won't denounce Fidel Castro.
Right, exactly. Well, and the response to this, I feel like, from sort of like the Republicans who have been having to respond to the backlash from their supporters is just that, well, this is not what I think. These are just my supporters and things like that. And while, yes, that is true, Marco Rubio didn't call him a terrorist. But the fact that this obviously is pervasive in the sense that, like, it has to be common knowledge sort of, like, in conservative circles.
This
is what people think. Or else you wouldn't be seeing it sort of, like, everywhere.
Yes.
You know, like, this is not just... These are not just, like... These are just not, like, some rogue commenters.
Right.
Like, you know, these are not...
especially...
These are not the only five conservatives who commented on these pages that think this. Like, it's obviously a thing.
And it's specific... Like, I would say specifically in Marco Rubio's district, which is made up entirely of, like, crazy ex-Cubans.
Right.
Like, this is a big thing. He knows that this is a thing.
Right.
He's not going to be on the forefront of celebrating Nelson Mandela because this is a big thing. And you'll be happy to know the Westboro Baptist Church has already booked their tickets to go pick at the funeral. They will be there. I will say that always lends an air of credibility to any event. They once picketed my college, and we all felt great about it.
Yeah.
It was passed all over the internet like it was the greatest thing that had ever happened.
Yeah.
And they called us something crazy, like fag something, something. Like, it was, yeah. There were a lot of gay slurs being tossed left and right. We were pretty happy with
it. I was going to say, yeah. Appropriately,
school, probably, exactly. Right? Yeah.
Yeah.
In any case, while most GOP members have been pretty good about, you know, expressing their respect for Mandela and what he stood for, some have been too good.
Yes.
Because they don't always have the greatest understanding of what they're talking about when it comes to these sorts of figures.
No.
Rick Santorum, especially.
On Fox News.
Seemed to understand. He seems to believe that he is a Nelson Mandela-like figure.
Yes. But
trying to save the nation from the scourge of Obamacare.
Yes. Much like apartheid.
Yes.
Obamacare.
Is destroying America.
Is destroying America. Yeah. Yes. That is confusing to me.
Sure.
On many
but
levels.
He has a great quote from Fox yes. News. Not uh-huh. surprising. Nelson Mandela stood up against a great injustice and was willing to pay a huge price for that. And that's the reason he's mourned today, because of that struggle that he performed. And I would make the argument that we have a great injustice going on right now in this country, with an ever-increasing size of government that is taking over and controlling people's lives, and Obamacare is front and center in that.
Mm, yes. And Rick Santorum, as Nelson Mandela, is here to save us from healthcare.
Yes. Interestingly, Nelson Mandela himself was more concerned with saving people from not having healthcare.
Correct. So, besides the fact that Rick Santorum is a idiot.
Right. This is a bonkers point.
He's also missing the point entirely. Right. Yes. Because, yeah. I mean, they basically, Mandela, when he became president, like, put it into the Constitution that all of South Africa had a fundamental right to health care. And he introduced a government-funded public health care system, which sort of has turned into what is now basically, like, covering...
the universal health care system.
Right.
But it started as a way to help poor people get health care.
Yes.
Which is what nations are supposed to be doing.
Correct.
So the scourge of Obamacare, I think, is something he would approve of.
I think so, too.
Probably did approve of when 3 days ago he was still alive and able to do such things.
He's already on record
as
approving something similar, so...
Yeah. So in any case, sorry, Rick.
But Rick Santorum is clearly not the only Republican saying dumb things.
Or missing the point.
Or missing
the point.
I'm missing the point. Because a lot of GOP men, as we know from sort of the 2012 election, are having problems running against and or just
talking to
women or about women. Yeah, basically.
So much so that the National Republican Congressional Committee is having to set up, like, special, you know, advice for them.
Yeah, they're trying to fix it.
Yeah. They're basically having aides sit down with Republicans to teach them what to say and what not to say when they're on the trail against a woman.
Yeah.
Which is something people should already know.
Like, how do you get to, like,
how
a place of power
know?
Like that, and you don't know how to speak to over 50% of the country? Like, that's a problem.
It's a problem.
Yeah. And even Boehner knows that this is going on, because, like, his staff has sort of, like, been working with this, because he was even quoted. He said, he said, some of our members just aren't as sensitive as they ought to be. Yes.
And in the 2014 cycle, they're expecting at least 10 races to pit House GOP male incumbents against Democratic female challengers.
Right. And
which is always the worst setup.
And more could
that
crop
could come up.
Like, those are just ones that we sort of know about. And there's a lot of people. We don't know who's running in a lot of these races yet.
Yeah. I mean, and they, like, since 2012, and 2012 was...
Yeah, it was the Todd Aiken. Indiana year. Who the hell was that?
Murdoch? No, that was... Is that Indiana? Well, that was him, too.
Oh, yeah.
Richard Murdoch.
Yeah, it was, wasn't it?
Yeah.
Yeah.
Who knows what states these people are from?
I don't know. States that should have Republican senators.
Exactly.
But don't.
Right. Because of dumb comments made about legitimate rape and women's bodies shutting all that down and a number of dumb nonsense issues there.
Yeah.
And they haven't stopped.
No.
Despite the fact that they very clearly lost a bunch of seats specifically over dumb things said about women.
Yeah.
And despite the fact that, you know, they have these rabid sort of anti-choice supporters, but a majority of the country is pro-choice. A majority of the country is not rabid on this issue.
Yeah.
So, like, that's a great issue to win a primary with, but it's a terrible issue to bring up in the general.
Terrible.
Like, don't talk about it.
Right.
Just move on.
And that's the thing that, like, I mean, I think there were a lot of people who were sort of, like, also quoted in this article as saying that, like, it's going to make the most sense for us to just sort of, like, run on economic issues, because those are really probably the issues that women care about. I mean, they care about women's issues, but if you're not
talking about
legitimate rape, then the next best thing is probably the economy,
exactly.
Like, when it's maybe not so great.
Right. Well, And I mean, they had a representative from Arizona, Trent Franks, talking about rape and pregnancy at the Judiciary Committee hearing earlier this year.
The House Republicans just passed a 20-week abortion ban.
Oh, well, and states have been doing that nonstop.
Right. Uh-huh.
Saxby Chambliss was busy blaming military sexual assault on hormones.
Mm, yes. So, which is, I mean, he's correct.
All things can be blamed on hormones.
But, I mean...
Don't say that.
That's not a reason to not do anything about it, Saxby Chambliss. Like, the hormones aren't going to go away. No. Is he proposing ending hormones in the military?
Yeah.
Is that what he just proposed?
Complete absence of
hormones. A repeal of hormones in the military.
Yeah, repeal of hormones.
All right.
You can do that.
Sure.
That's probably cheaper than just addressing the problem. But in any case, this has been plaguing them for years.
Yeah.
And are they just now doing something about it? That's what I'm confused about.
Well,
like, I know that they have talked about needing to do something about this in the past, but that's been, like, independent lawmakers sort of mentioning that in speeches where they were intending to sort of set themselves apart on this issue.
Right.
I have not seen a major institutional sort of, like, effort to address this problem.
Well, I haven't either. And I think that even if there is sort of an institutional, you know, I mean, I just think that, like, you can sort of teach them to maybe not talk about these issues, but, like, I mean, I think,
well, you
honestly,
can't address it because they think this.
Well, they think, and that's the problem, I think. And I think we should get as many women challengers as we can, and we should have meetings with them to goad them into talking about
exactly.
this.
Exactly. Well, and I hope if the DNC is listening to our podcast, which we know they are, that is the direction we advise that you go in. Talk about women's issues nonstop.
Yeah, because
talking left, right, and center about
because the Republicans can try to not talk about them, but if you force their hand, then they'll have to talk about them. And like Lila said, they don't think anything different. They're just being trained to sort of like
not say anything.
To not say anything.
Well, and think about that. Those have been the issues that have been great star makers for Republicans in the last couple of years. I mean, Wendy Davis is a hero because of women's issues,
right?
Because she's talking about women's issues, and because she goaded a bunch of people into having to be against women's issues, like basically.
Yeah.
But I mean, this is a great star maker for Democratic women. This is because Republican women can't talk about it. They also think the same dumb things that Republican
men do. Right.
So this is
they might be able to say what they think without saying calling somebody sweetie or something like that. But I mean, the sentiment is the same.
This is our pro-life. This is how we sort of combat the sort of lifestyle politics that Republicans have been building their base up on for years.
Yeah.
Talk about women's issues. Those are economic. Those can be in any context because women also are related to the economy.
They are.
They are most of the population.
Right.
They are a majority
of
the population.
Here.
They live here. They are part of our families.
Yes.
As I've said in the past, every person in the world is related to a woman.
Correct.
So it's like how everyone's related to old people. You can't piss off the elderly because everyone has an old person. Everyone came from old people.
Right, exactly.
And everyone also came from a woman.
Right. And everyone is going to get old.
Everyone's going to get old. Yeah. Everyone is going to have to interact and be related to women for the rest of their lives.
Yep.
That's how it goes. You can't be born without a woman. So,
yep.
Moving on.
Yep.
That's not the only issue in which Republicans are being tone deaf, though.
Oh, God.
We're going to talk in a little bit about some of the big strikes that went on this week in the fast food sector.
Right.
But Rand Paul was running off his mouth this week about how unemployment insurance is a, quote, disservice to workers.
Mm-hmm.
We are having trouble understanding why. And if you know why, please tell us, because we don't know.
I'll tell you why he said this, but he's wrong just because there's nothing to be able to do about it. Basically, he was quoting some study that, like, employers are less likely to hire the long-term unemployed.
Right.
Which
that's true.
Is true.
We know that already.
But there's not enough jobs for all employers to be hiring all of the long-term unemployed anyway. So you can't just leave these. If there's not the jobs for these people to go to, then you can't leave them to not have unemployment insurance. Like, if there were jobs for all of these people to go to, and they were choosing to not go to jobs because they were getting unemployment insurance and they'd been on it for 100 weeks, then that's potentially a problem, Rand Paul.
Yeah.
And I might even be there with you.
Yeah.
But that's not what...
That's not the situation,
that's not
as
a
it
thing.
Stands.
That's right.
Well, we had this discussion a lot with people around the Occupy protests because they would be like, why don't those people just go and get jobs? They're
take a shower and go to work.
Yeah, and it was like, well, there's only one job for every five people, so where are these people supposed to go?
Right.
Like, you can work... like, there's no amount of hard work that will get you a job that doesn't exist.
Correct.
So this is the same problem. The long-term unemployed are definitely less likely to get hired. Yeah. That's a problem anyway.
Right.
Because most of these people haven't been unemployed for any good reason.
And that's
they're not
all
just lazy.
If they're less likely to get hired, that's all the more reason to have unemployment insurance. Basically, what he did was just sort of
describe why unemployment insurance is a great thing that we should have more of.
Correct.
Yeah. But so, in any case, the cost of unemployment insurance also, like, can't really be measured in economic terms. It's not just a net loss that we're paying out unemployment insurance, because there are other ways that these costs come back on us if we don't support people.
Well, right.
When they have no other support.
Exactly.
I mean, that's, then what, we're going to pay for them to eat 3 meals a day and have somewhere to live in prison?
Yeah.
Like, or well, we're gonna, you know, like, I mean,
yeah, exactly.
We're going to pay for their food stamps. There's all these other programs we're going to have
to pay for. I know, they keep talking about the price tag being too big, but it's like those costs are hidden elsewhere. It's like, you know, because basically the Democrats are trying to get the extension put into the budget deal that they has to get done by, what is it, the 15th? Oh,
yeah,
that's this week.
Oh.
Isn't it? No.
No.
Yeah.
I don't know.
It is.
I don't know what the date
Today's
is.
Today's the 8th or 9th or something like
that.
Who knows? But anyway.
we'll talk about it next week.
Yeah, anyway. Right. We'll know when it happens. Yeah. But basically the Republicans are not happy about the $25 billion cost.
Right.
Sort of like, well, I mean, sorry.
Sorry about it.
Like, what?
I was going to talk about this on the podcast and decided not to. It's like the argument that Obamacare costs too much. Or sorry, the Affordable Care Act costs too much.
Yes.
The costs were hidden elsewhere. We were still paying for people to get emergency health services.
Obviously.
At cost, basically.
Right.
In ERs around the country because they didn't have health care. So now we're subsidizing their health care instead of paying for it on the other end, and they will be healthier and it will be cheaper for us. That's what we want. This is the same thing with unemployment insurance. It's the argument. It's why we have a welfare system at all. It's why we have any social support, you know, safety network systems. It's because it ends up being expensive for us in both material, like in like money terms, but also just in lifestyle terms. It ends up being crappy for everyone to live in a country where unemployed people can't eat.
Well, yeah. Like, what are you going to do with all of the long-term unemployed if you cut off their insurance?
Do you want to live in a city where like 75% of the population is going hungry?
No.
No.
No one does.
That's unpleasant. That's like Detroit.
Yeah.
That's Detroit.
Nobody wants to live in Detroit.
That's what it is.
And we know that by the fact that no one is currently living in Detroit.
We're not going to be talking about Detroit, but in Detroit, they're talking about cutting pensions. That's setting a really dangerous precedent
that
we're against. And we'll talk about it, I think, in one of the upcoming episodes.
Yeah.
Because that's sort of an ongoing thing. Because Detroit is declaring bankruptcy officially.
Right. Speaking of unemployment, it's
jobs
going down.
Yes. Well, the unemployment rate, as we know, has nothing to do with actual unemployment in the broad sense, because it doesn't count the long-term unemployed, because it only counts people that have been unemployed within like the last 6 months or something like that.
Right. I think the long-term, the people who they sort of consider having dropped out of the labor force, like, does continue to go down, but we have sort of had like a good quarter of growth in the economy and growth in jobs. I think we've averaged over 200,000 jobs
seasonal,
a month.
Seasonally,
a lot of it is seasonal,
expected,
but you know, people were sort of hoping that it will start compounding on itself, because sort of, you know, obviously the way things works is when more people have jobs and they spend more money on things, then you have to make more things, then there's more jobs needed, and sort of, you know,
you need
one thing to pick up before something, you know, else is going to pick up.
It's the fake economy syndrome.
Well, right, exactly.
The economy would be fixed if we all just had a good economy.
Right. Exactly. But, you know, there's been other good signs because, you know, just the growth, I think, of the economy sort of, like, was up, like, 3% or something like that, or GDP or whatever it was. But, like, also, it was the best year in auto sales we'd had in, like, our best month in, like, 7 years or something. And
new home sales were up.
So there were some good, you know, obviously you want... It would be great to have like a month where we added like a million jobs, you know, like that would be super awesome.
We could use a million jobs.
But, you know, I mean, and this is also sort of takes into account, like, it didn't seem like the government shutdown really didn't damage, which is great.
Well,
but,
and also we don't know because the jobs numbers.
We might find out that we didn't. We lost 200,000 jobs next month.
We don't know.
There's no way to know.
Black Friday was not the biggest shopping day in the history of the world.
No, it wasn't. I was actually down. And it's
possibly because people are dying on Black Friday. Like,
well, I know.
Stay home on Black Friday. Well, and also, there were a bunch of movements to not go shop at big box stores on Black Friday because they had been doing things like soliciting fucking charity for their workers that they just weren't paying enough.
Well, right. I know. Like Walmart specifically. But also, I think
donations
a lot of people, I think, were also just sort of like fed up with it because, like, for the last few years, people have been opening, like, earlier and earlier.
Yes. And, like, people and have now just been it's sort of, like, you can't even go to your own dinner anymore because you got to get in line so
early. Yeah, now places were open on Thanksgiving this year. So there were a lot of workers that were upset about that. And there were a lot of just, like, there was, like, I think just a general disdain for sort of the whole the culture of it. Yeah. So, which is sort of, I mean, I'm glad that there's that disdain. However, I have...
You also have participated in the past?
On numerous occasions. Yeah. I didn't this year, not because of really any disdain, but just because, I didn't really see anything that I was, like, super in need of.
You didn't need a microwave this year.
No, I didn't need a microwave or Pyrex this year, because I already had it.
The year I went, I didn't need Pyrex, by the way. But you got it. Yeah, but exactly. I didn't need it. Cyber Monday was big.
Well, that's the other thing, too. I think that there was... The Saturday after Black Friday is also... when you're supposed to do local shopping. I think they call it, like, Local Saturday or something like that. And then there's Cyber Monday, which was up, like, 20%. So
That's the wave of the future.
Well, I think so, too. And, like, there was
Would you rather die at a Walmart, or would you rather just get your cheap microwave online? Right.
Well, and there was also a stat, too, that I don't think I pulled, but, like, something ridiculous, like 50% or something was, like, mobile traffic. To these sites too, so like it's just sort of like why
while you're arguing with your family.
Yeah, exactly. Instead,
you can all just sit on your phones and you feel great about being in each other's company, and you won't have to talk.
Exactly.
So that's good.
But anyway, sort of like a mixed bag heading into the holiday season in terms of buying.
Have heard that they are expecting, because they haven't really been moving merchandise on the shelves in actual physical stores. There's supposed to be massive after-holiday sales this year.
Oh.
So keep that in mind.
I will.
Yeah. I am expecting after Christmas to really just shop it up. Yeah.
And that's a good time to do it anyway.
It's always a good time to do it. But there's supposed to be a lot of overstock at that point.
Oh, interesting. Because
they really haven't been doing the kind of business that they usually... Like, not even just on Black Friday, but just in general, the shopping season hasn't been as strong as it has been in the past.
Right.
So they've over-ordered. Oh. Meanwhile... Exciting labor news.
Yeah.
Those strikes that we promised you happened.
They sure did.
They happened in a lot. There were like 100 of them. I mean, or there were 100 locations. Yeah. But, you know, the big ones were all accounted for. Chicago was, I think, sort of the main rallying point. New York had strikes. Right. Boston, Detroit, Oakland, L.A., St. Louis. That was the $15 an hour minimum wage argument. And on Wednesday, Obama actually made a speech about income inequality.
Yes.
Where he sort of... talked a little bit about this issue. He has recommended in the past raising the minimum wage to $10.10 an hour, which is a lot better than the $7.25 it currently stands at.
Right.
Chicago has its own minimum wage,
which is higher than a lot of places.
It's higher than a lot of places, but it's still $8.25. Right. Which you can't live on $8.25 an hour. And there really hasn't been much progress on this issue. It's something that Obama's talked about quite a bit, but there really hasn't been a lot of progress.
Yeah.
So in any case, in Chicago, they sort of like toward town a bit. They started at a McDonald's at like 6:15 in the morning and then sort of moved on to like Wendy's and then Walgreens and Macy's and Sears, and people walked off their shifts as it happened. And then New York, I think, has like something like 55,000 fast food workers. It's obviously crazy. They didn't all participate.
Right.
But so there were strikes there as well. And most of the coverage it got was negative news coverage from Fox News' pundits.
Right.
Because that's what always happens.
Right.
They're appalled that people are thinking of these as real jobs and not just jobs that we punish people with or something. Right. I'm not really sure what they're...
Right, I know. It's sort of like, what would they have... I mean,
what
how...
would they have us do otherwise?
I know. It's sort of like, if these are not real jobs, then should these people just quit them and then get unemployed? Get unemployment
They would
insurance?
Probably make roughly the same is amount of plan? Money.
Like, I mean...
Well, and this is a movement that is sort of like slowly building... ground. There were walkouts in November at Walmart, specifically related to some of the seasonal shopping issues that we discussed earlier. But this is something, there have been strikes like all summer.
Right.
There have been discussions, you know, they have the backing of major unions like SEIU. They have a major organizational force at this point. If this is happening in 100 cities at once.
Well, and that's the thing, you know, I think I heard them talk either the day of or the next day sort of on NPR, and sort of all the, you know, the pundits there were sort of saying like, while nothing necessarily is going to come from these strikes specifically, just like, you know, in a tactile way that like you're going
to
see right now.
To end this strike, we will give you $15.
It's sort of a, it's, you know, it's almost similar to just the Occupy movement, in a way. Right. I mean, that this
it
just
signals it's a culture of anger about
it. A culture of anger about it, and it's also continuing to grow. I mean, this is sort of the second time they've had these fast food strikes, and, you know, the first time it was only, like, in 5 or 10 cities or something like that, and we had 100 cities this time. I think that the more that people sort of are even... Just the fact that Fox News is talking about it, even if it's in a negative way, it's sort of, like, that is, like, good in the sense that it was a news story. Like, that's all you want, is you want people to, like, understand what the issue is, and... That's what strikes
and oftentimes Fox News sort of works at a counter purpose with this because their insensitive anger over this doesn't really resonate with normal people.
No.
I don't see them talking about how people should just get over it and think to myself, well, fuck fast food workers. Who do they think they are? They're working in fast food.
No.
You know, like, I think to myself, well, I would like to earn a wage. So, like, why wouldn't they? Like,
yeah, exactly.
If I work full time, I expect to earn a full time wage. Like, why wouldn't we expect the same thing for them?
Yeah.
And so it certainly, it doesn't, it's an issue where the sort of, like, sympathy ends up lying with the workers regardless of who's talking about it.
Yes.
And it also, it's great because we're all talking about a $15 an hour minimum wage right now.
I know.
When have we ever talked about that? Sometimes we're like, we should raise it to $8 an hour. Like,
I know.
Fuck $8 an hour.
Well, this is, that's another.
And Fox News was like, what are they going to ask for next? An $100,000 million, you know, somebody on Fox News.
Sure. Start there. Start with $100,000 million.
No, exactly. And this was on The Daily Show. And Jon Stewart was like, well, it seems like we could come up with something between $725 and $100,000 an hour.
Exactly. Yeah.
That would be more reasonable.
Yes.
So no, we are not talking about $100,000 an hour, but fuck it. Let's say that. Let's start there.
Yeah. Start there.
Start high.
Yeah.
It's like you want something. The best bargaining strategy is to go and ask him for everything that you want.
Yep.
Don't pull any punch. Ask for more than you want. Don't pull any punches.
Yep.
You know?
Oh boy.
In any case, misunderstanding the economy seems to be a specialty of the Republicans. First of all, some of them are now talking about repealing the minimum wage.
Oh, yeah. So, I mean...
that's awesome.
Right.
Let's get rid of it entirely. Sure.
We're probably not going to see an increase from this Republican Congress.
No.
Because you have people like
Joe Barton.
Yeah, Joe Barton, who's from Texas. And he says, his direct quote was, I think it's outlived its usefulness. It may have been of some value back in the Great Depression. I would vote to repeal the minimum wage.
That is so crazy.
Wow.
That is crazy.
Wow.
We're like seconds from being in the Great Depression and have been for like a decade
now. Joe Barton, I feel like
it's not one of
may have
the
been
leading geniuses.
No, not one of the leading geniuses. And also maybe one of the Congress people who remembers the Great Depression.
Yes. Yeah, exactly.
Yeah.
And does not remember the present.
No. No.
Not familiar with that.
No.
Meanwhile, Elizabeth Warren got into this sort of like epic argument with the creepiest sounding think tank in America.
Right?
It is called the Third Way. It sounds like a cult.
It's totally a cult.
It's supposedly sort of a centrist think tank, but it's totally backed by corporate interests in Wall Street.
Yes.
So it's not centrist in the sense of it actually being centrist.
Right. It's supposed to be a centrist, supposedly Democrat. Center left, which it's not.
Not at all. Because they wrote an op-ed in the Wall Street Journal basically saying that Elizabeth Warren's Social Security plans are untenable because we have a, quote, undebatable solvency crisis.
Right.
Which, with the current funding patterns, we do. But what their article ignores is they basically keep hammering her because her plan would raise the cap. So it would make it so that people who make more than $113,000 a year pay more in Social Security taxes.
Right.
Currently, you only are taxed up to that amount.
Right.
Or the percent, you know, the percentage is capped at that amount. So it would raise the cap. And then also, as part of it, it would pay out more to people that made more, which is, you know, what you get in Social Security
is sort of like that
dependent
whole
on what you put into
sort of,
it.
Right.
Yeah. Right. So as part of that, and this is a way to make it sort of like possible for rich people to support this policy, basically.
Right.
She's not doing this because she thinks rich people deserve more money from us.
Right.
She's doing this because this is how you get them to support your policy.
Right.
You say, you put more in, we'll give you more.
You get it. Yeah.
Anyway, they choose not to focus on the raising the cap issue.
Right.
They're choosing to focus solely on her paying more to rich people.
Right.
And
so then
they
accuse her of
that
being
it's getting
a corporatist,
more untenable
basically.
Based on her position. Which is crazy.
Right.
And she called them out this week, saying it was crazy.
Yes.
She, earlier in the week, she challenged them to be transparent about what donations they're getting from Wall Street,
right?
And challenged all think tanks
to do that.
That.
Right.
And then later she was interviewed by HuffPo and said that their claims were just, quote, flatly wrong. She said, we could make modest adjustments and make the system financially stable for a century, and we could make somewhat larger adjustments and make the system pay more for seniors who rely on it. The conversation is has too long been about whether to cut Social Security benefits a little bit or a lot, and that's flatly the wrong debate to have in mind.
She's exactly.
The only person talking about this.
Well, right.
Even she the and Democrats are
she
like,
and Bernie Sanders, basically.
Yeah, she and Bernie Sanders are like...
And she's absolutely right. And this just goes back to sort of like what we were talking about where, you know, go in and ask for $100,000 million, zillion dollars. You go, like, don't talk about, like, how much you're going to cut Social Security.
No. You talk about how much... Talk about raising the cap and see if you can get to a point where it stays where it is.
Right. You, you know? You try and figure out a way to fix it. Like, not to gut it. It's crazy.
Well, and as she points out, and as we have pointed out before on the podcast, this doesn't add to the debt. It's a separate funding mechanism.
It's right.
It has nothing to do with the budget.
We are paying into that.
That's why you should be angry about this going away, is because
you're paying for it.
You're paying for it. So if they tell you that they're going to cut your benefits, they're taking money from you and then not giving it back to you.
Right.
That's not how it works.
No.
So
it's not at all.
Screw him. My favorite thing, though, that she said in response to all of this, because the Third Way also said that under her plan, Jamie Dimon, who's the head of JPMorgan Chase, would be entitled to a higher payout. They were hammering her really hard on that.
Right.
She said, oh, please, I'm out there working for Jamie Dimon the same way Dick Cheney is out there trying to save the environment. She's just a gem in every way.
Dream.
She's just saving the world one step at a time.
Yeah.
We need a world saver.
Oh, my God.
We're all about to die because it's fucking freezing
out. It's so freaking cold. And even in California. And we're gonna get to California next. And it's actually seriously cold in California in ways that is becoming a problem. We've been sort of like the laughing stock because we've been complaining about it being cold. But it actually really is.
While
we'll get there in a second.
I was in Argentina. I saw someone post on Facebook a local news report from L.A. that was about... a drizzle storm.
Oh, yeah.
A storm. I say that in quotes.
Yeah.
Where it was a newscaster who earnestly was panicking about a slight drizzle and was, like, struggling for images because it wasn't even wet on the sidewalk because the drizzle was so light.
Right.
She was, like, looking for she was interviewing patrons at sidewalk cafes who had to move inside.
Yeah.
Someone was like, well, I had to bring out an umbrella.
Right.
But she was like, the drizzle might come back, but it stopped so far.
Right. And those are the stories that are like obviously getting the national press. And I get that because they are totally ridiculous, but we'll just do California.
Let's
while
do
we're
California
talking about
first.
It,
yeah.
We were going to do it last.
It's really
but
fucking
we're here.
Cold here.
It's really cold. And like, it's cold in a way that like is a problem on a lot of different levels because there's already been some deaths in San Francisco due to hypothermia.
Right.
Because they've had freezing temperatures there, and they have a huge homeless population in San Francisco.
San Diego is also experiencing freezing temperatures on the coastal areas.
Right, and they've been getting
flooding and things like that.
And the 5, the interstate, which is a huge interstate, has been getting a lot of snow. There's been like a lot of car accident deaths, or not a lot, but you know, a few. And I think on a big level, and this affects the rest of the country, so they can make fun of us if they want.
Yeah, but they will
but
be starving to death.
They're going to be starving to death because we grow all of their
food.
Shit for them.
Yeah.
I mean, you know, California does, like, we do a lot of citrus. We do a lot of strawberries. Like, Yuma was having, where my parents live.
The lettuce capital of the country.
Yeah, they call that the winter vegetable capital of the United States because most of your vegetables, like greens and things that you're getting in the winter are coming from that area there.
From migrant
workers, too, by the way. Let me get that in there.
Yeah.
But they were having overnight freezing temperatures.
Yeah.
So it's a really huge problem
frost
for our
here are
frost
a problem.
Here are a problem for the entire country's food supply. So you can make fun of us for panicking about the rain, and maybe you should.
Right.
But it's an issue.
Well, and the other thing that you have to keep in mind when you talk about freezing temperatures in places that are not accustomed to the cold, because like, for example, my cousin lives in Oklahoma. She's from New England. They had snow in Oklahoma. She was, like, thrilled.
Right.
4 inches of snow is, like, child's play for her.
Sure, yeah.
But people in Oklahoma aren't prepared for 4 inches of snow. They
don't
have the plows to deal with it.
No.
They're not insulated to deal with it. And in Southern California, we live without insulation, by and large. So it's fucking cold, and it's cold inside and outside because there's no way for it to be hot enough inside because we don't have insulated houses.
Right.
Like, my apartment building is not insulated.
Right.
So that's a problem as well. Less problematic problems. I don't have a winter coat out here, and I'm really cold.
Exactly. Yeah.
And it's reaching the 30s at night here.
Right.
By the way, I'm currently sleeping in 30s temperatures because that's the temperature my apartment is.
Yeah.
If it's that temperature outside, it's also that temperature inside.
Yeah.
In the rest of the country, they're also having bad weather.
Yeah.
We were earlier today. There was Brent was pointing out to me a football game that was taking place in, like, what appeared to be about 8 feet of snow.
Yeah, I don't know how they were playing in that game.
I was
game.
Like, why can't they cancel the game? And he was like, well, you don't cancel a game. And I was like, that seems wrong. They're all playing in short-sleeve shirts. Like, did they not have... We talked about this at brunch, but why didn't they have warmer clothing?
I know.
I'm worried they're going to catch
play
cold.
Football. You can play football with sleeves.
Yeah, you can do anything with sleeves, especially yeah. in the snow.
Yeah, exactly.
But the whole Mid-Atlantic is experiencing cold weather, freezing rain, snow. Virginia,
right, and further south than a lot of times it does.
Yeah, because like Virginia is having Tennessee are having big problems. Right. They, as you might guess, don't have the infrastructure to deal with massive amounts of snow.
Right.
Like,
Texas has been getting
Boston
a lot.
Boston having a big snowstorm is like yeah, okay, sure, whatever. You just
carry
deal with
on
that.
About your business. Right.
But I mean, there are degrees to which snow becomes problematic in areas that have more to do with their capacity to plow the streets yeah. than anything else. Like, New York City is fine in a little snow, but it gets overwhelmed when there's massive amounts of snow because there's not enough plows to deal with yeah. the fall, you know, to deal with it right. in a timely manner. And that may be true in New York City, but in D.C., they only have a few snow plows. So, like, if it snows a lot in D.C., it's like, well, yeah. all hell breaks loose.
Yeah.
And it's like, here, people aren't used to driving in the rain, so they're really not used to driving in the snow.
right.
And if you're heading to San Francisco this weekend, you might have to be doing that.
Yeah.
So, don't die.
No.
Drive safely.
Yes.
Put your lights on in bad weather, people.
Oh, people don't
you
know
to
do
start
that.
Doing that. What
it's
is
so annoying.
Here's what bothers me about it specifically. We live in a city that's entirely made up of people from other places. Places where
they
it rains
know.
And snows.
You don't forget
how to drive in the rain.
No.
You do, obviously.
Well, you do.
We've proven that.
Right.
But, I mean, put your lights on, for God's sakes.
Come on.
You don't need tire chains, but just like...
No.
Do you put some lights on?
People forget that you... The reason that you put your lights on is so other people can see you, not so you can see.
Exactly.
Like, people think, I can see fine, and there's street lights, and it's
like, well,
that's
yeah.
not why you have lights on your car.
No, exactly.
You idiot.
Yeah. That's not why you drive around with low lights in an urban area.
No.
You do that so that other cars don't hit you.
Correct.
That's why.
Yeah.
Or everyone at least get a fluorescent colored car. That helps a lot.
Yeah.
We can see each other's cars.
Yeah.
No problem. Me and
yeah.
Brent are never going to get into a car accident with each other. Because We'll see it coming
yeah.
before it happens.
Yeah.
Meanwhile, in other troubling nature news, did you know that crocodiles and alligators are, like, now using tools to attract prey?
Yeah.
A bunch of sneaky jerks.
Using tools.
You heard that right.
Yeah.
Those snapping, annoying, lizardy things that
right. as
are
if they're,
terrorizing Florida.
As if they're not already killing machines.
Exactly.
They're now
just,
they're building things?
Like a giant
they're building things.
Muscle attached to a jaw, basically.
No.
And now they're, like, building little nests of sticks to attract birds. And then
right.
sneaking up on them and chomping on
yeah.
them. Like a bunch of jerk
smarties.
Smarties.
Jerk smarties.
Yeah. They call them mugger crocodiles, I think,
yeah.
or something like that.
Yeah.
But there's this online ecology journal where a behavioral ecologist, whose name is Vladimir Dinets, and a bunch of colleagues wrote an article that... Basically, it started with the zoo in India where he observed a crocodile doing this.
Yeah.
Where they basically, like, balance a bunch of small sticks near where egrets were coming to, like, get sticks to build their nests. And then they would lunge at them when they got there.
I mean.
And he saw them engage in this behavior once. He only saw one, several times. He only saw one actual attack. He also later went on to some other zoo somewhere in Florida
sure.
or something. But then there were a bunch of people, or he was observing it in, like, Tennessee, but then there was a bunch of people who also wrote this article with him in a wildlife park in Florida who saw this happen multiple times. Those were not crocodiles that could have known each other.
No.
They thought of that plan independently.
Right. Well, and that's the thing. It's like, it's not just that they're, like, using a tool. It's just that they were sort of able to process that, like, I'm going to go build a nest for a bird. Like, there was, like, a...
There was a series of thoughts that
led to them, like... deciding to do
yeah.
this. I don't want them thinking.
No. I want them to smell prey if they're nearby and be like, oh, I'll just go eat that.
I'm
going to chomp on that.
Yeah.
They have enough advantages. They're made of
yeah.
muscle.
They don't need
they're
thoughts.
They're slimy and disgusting, and they have giant, giant jaws.
Now they're conniving?
Yeah, that's too much. That is too much.
That's too much.
Also too much is fucking spiders dropping from the ceiling and falling onto my computer while I'm working at
home. Oh, my God.
This sneaky little Lila spider...
Lila texted me. Earlier this week, in a just
fell out of the sky,
total panic.
Just like I'm just sitting in my computer,
yeah,
typing away in my kitchen, happy as a clam.
No.
Spider attack right
yeah.
away, just falling from the ceiling right
yeah.
onto my keyboard.
And some might think that maybe the spider just happened to fall. I like to think that spider also knew what it was doing.
Yeah, of course.
Spiders are also conniving. I'm not basing this on any science, but...
No, I'm basing it on how many eyes they have.
It's well, that's
too
science.
Many.
Yeah, it's too
it's
many.
Too, it's more than yeah. you need.
And legs.
And legs.
They have too many legs.
They have too many of everything.
oh, my God.
So nature's become more troubling by the moment.
Oh, my God. So troubling.
And in unrelated news, we're being also troubled by an internet phenomenon.
Ugh.
We're the last people on this train, but we just thought, hell, there's no news this week. We'll
no.
talk about it.
We're just ranting, basically. We're just ranting and we just talked
point.
About a spider attack, people.
Yeah.
And,
and now we're going to talk about the scourge that is Upworthy.
Yeah, it's a reach this week. But Upworthy is so annoying. First off, all of their headlines are vague.
Really?
They're the type of vague that I hate on Facebook.
You'll
because,
never
like,
believe
a lot of people,
what this child and puppy found common ground on.
Right. It's like when people leak, and they call it, there's a name for it. It's vague booking.
Yeah.
Basically.
Yeah.
We have friends that vague book.
We have a lot of vague booking going on.
Boy. I hate that. But Upworthy is doing that. They're vague booking,
yeah.
basically.
Yeah.
Because...
And their headlines are designed in the way that... Like, it's like a mixture of a top 10 list and, like, a HuffPo later headline.
Yeah.
Like, those headlines that are, like, 7 secrets to keeping your marriage fresh, which I always click on, even though
yeah.
I'm not married and don't
but these
care
are less,
the 7 secrets
more
are.
Vague than that,
these are
though,
even more vague than that, because they're just like, you'll never believe this inspiring story that happened.
I know, and they're getting a little more inspirational than I like,
they
too,
used
because
to also
they used
do
to...
political content.
Well, and they
would be
still
like,
do
you'll never
sometimes.
Believe what Elizabeth Warren said to these bankers to make
right.
them change their mind.
And
I would be like, oh,
well,
I'll click on that. Of course, I want to know. I don't want to know what, like, an injured puppy and,
no.
like, a fucking girl with a disability got together to discuss their, you know, their problems with. Like, I don't care about any of that. The human interest stories on Upworthy, which I click on all the time because they sound like stories that could potentially be interesting because there's no information in the title, are driving me nuts.
Yeah.
They're driving me to insanity.
Yep. No, me too.
Yeah.
And people post them.
All the time.
Ugh.
Guys.
Come on.
Post an actual news story. If something adorable happened with a puppy, there is a news story somewhere that can tell you the story.
Right.
I don't mind when you're posting puppy news stories. I'll click on those, too.
Yeah.
I'm not afraid of a puppy news story. I'm not afraid of just a slideshow of birds in funny poses.
Right.
I'll click on all of those.
I know. You like those more than I do, which
I
is
love them.
Sort of interesting to me, because I wouldn't...
I
feel like, to most people, if they had to guess which of the two of us was going to... click on a bird in a funny pose article, I feel like most people would probably
yeah.
pick me.
I
but it's not. I
lost,
don't give
like,
a shit about birds
a
and funny
full
poses.
Day
I don't like birds.
On a series of photos that was just like a cat and a ferret that were friends.
I don't like that.
I
like cats.
Stop.
I don't like ferrets. I don't want them to be friends
like,
with each other. That's something about that is terrifying
it was
to
like
me.
120 photos of a cat and a ferret being friends.
No, I don't like that one bit.
And I clicked through all 120.
It's upsetting.
I don't know what to say about that, because I also, I don't particularly like animals in real life.
No, I know.
I mean, I like some dogs.
Yeah, you
sometimes
you pretend.
Sometimes
well
I like to
dogs.
Pick up Ray Ray and,
yeah.
you know,
then
walk
you have
around
to wash
with her.
Your hands.
Then I always have to wash my hands because I'm allergic to Ray Ray.
Yeah.
But not the way I'm allergic to cats. Cats I can't touch. No. Ray Ray I can touch. I just have to wash my hands.
I saw a multicolored cat wandering around your apartment building today, by the
oh
way,
my
when
God.
I came to pick you up.
Who,
what is that?
Like, where'd that cat come from? Was
I don't
it related know. To the lion cat in some way?
There's a lion
there's
cat?
There's a cat that someone shaves like a lion that just
no,
walks around the neighborhood.
No, it wasn't that.
He hangs out with the gray cats, but I can't tell if they're friends or just sort of like at peace with each other.
Are they scared of the lion cat or no?
I'm not really sure. I worry that the lion cat is being made fun of by the gray cats.
Oh, I'm not concerned about that at all.
The lion cat must live somewhere because someone's shaving the lion cat, but he wanders around the neighborhood all the time. So he's not living somewhere responsible that keeps their cat indoors like
right.
a responsible cat owner.
Yeah.
So the lion cat probably is bringing fleas to everyone in the neighborhood because he
probably.
Just wanders around from flea to flea.
Well, he's also bringing it
and then
to
going
his home.
Inside. Exactly.
Yeah.
Yeah. But in oh, any God. Case, the moral of the story.
Upworthy.
Upworthy. Down with Upworthy.
Yep.
I'm going to start a Facebook page. Someone's yeah. probably done that.
Probably.
Everyone's. We're like the very last people on this train.
I know.
Nobody,
people have been complaining about Upworthy for a long time.
Yeah.
But
today I hit a.
We just haven't had time to do it publicly yet.
Today I hit a maximum amount of annoyance with them.
Sure.
So I just went for it. And then in other things, final things that are annoying.
Yeah.
Or awesome. I'm not sure. It's awesomely annoying.
Yeah.
The sound
of
music
happened this
it
week.
It happened.
And all humanity watched it.
And let's be honest, that was the biggest news story of the week.
It sort of, well, Nelson Mandela died.
I mean, aside from Nelson Mandela dying,
okay.
if there were two things that would define Facebook this week,
oh,
they would
right.
be literally every person that I know on Facebook watched this live. Because I
totally.
Got, I was
live
getting live
it,
updates
live
and
Facebook.
Live tweets starting at 5 p.m.
Everything
when it started on the East Coast.
Yep.
It was 3 hours long?
Yeah.
That's too long.
Yeah.
That is way too long.
Yeah.
That's too long. solid.
Carrie Underwood, you know, didn't maybe get the greatest reviews, and that was probably rightfully so,
yes.
because we didn't see the whole thing. We saw an appropriate amount of it, which, was,
only
about, which was about,
what,
20 minutes in total
yeah.
from two different
yes.
scenes.
Our first reaction, which actually came care of Brent's roommate, was we were just, it just sort of like came on while the guide screen was on, so it was just a little thing in the corner of the TV
oh, yeah.
screen, and he said, why is it lit like General Hospital? This
yeah.
is a $9 million production. They couldn't do any better with the lighting.
It was weird. It
like,
looked,
I get that that's not
it
a
looked
million,
cheap.
$100 million.
And I know that that is
so
partially
cheap.
To do with the fact that it was live, and also just sort of like on these sort of odd stages, because it was sort of,
yeah.
you know, they were doing the stage play and it was live, so it sort of had to be built in a way that looked
yeah.
that way, but it really did sort of like look chintzy.
Real chintzy. Like soap opera style chintzy.
Yeah.
And that the reason soap operas look that way is because they just sort of like, they're like real run and gun, like they just shoot everything once or twice and then move on and they don't really bother lighting it and it's just sort of like whatever.
Yeah.
And so that's why live TV will look that way. Soap operas are basically shot live.
Right.
However, this was a major television event.
It's huge.
With huge stars in it.
Yeah.
I mean,
well, mostly,
some
are
huger
like,
than others.
Right, exactly. I mean, Carrie Underwood was certainly the draw, and she was in the print campaign. I mean, the billboards
right.
that you see around Los Angeles were literally just Carrie Underwood's giant head. And
I mean, it had
and
Audra McDonald was in it.
I know. She was great. And she. But I'm wondering if there was any sort of like outrage on the Twitter sphere about her playing Mother Superior.
In a German nunnery?
Right. Because
yeah.
she's African-American, if you don't know Audra McDonald.
Right.
But she's, like, the queen
if
of all things.
If you don't know her, you probably should.
Oh, my God.
Are
she's
you living
like
under a rock?
Everything. But, I mean, that was the first scene that we saw, too, was when they were doing My Favorite Things.
Yes. Yeah.
We just turned on the TV, and that was going on. And I even said, I was like, you can see the look on her face where she was like, give me something, right. Carrie Underwood. Like,
make
like,
it emote something.
but she just sort of, like, was
my favorite thing
serving it.
About what everyone was saying about it was that, so we, Laura Benanti, who's another Broadway alum,
yeah.
was playing the Countess, who's sort of
yeah.
like the villain character.
Yeah.
And everybody was rooting for the villain because Carrie Underwood was so blank and sort of like
yeah.
unappealing.
Well,
and
she's just a, I mean, she's amazing.
She was serving it. As
yeah.
Well,
she sort of, Laura Benanti sort of has like that. She's a good, she has resting bitch face.
Yeah. She's a good villain.
She's a good villain.
Yeah.
I mean, she doesn't really have to, she doesn't have to do much.
No.
She just like looks kind of like generically evil.
Yeah.
And she was doing a good job of even upping her generic evilness.
Yeah. Well, unlike Carrie Underwood, she was also attempting to emote at times, so that really helped. It was hard
yeah.
to emote under that lighting, probably. Also, it was probably hard to emote with no live audience. I don't know why they didn't do it in front of a live audience.
That was really, I think that,
like,
well, I mean, look.
If you're
going to
do a stage version that looks like it's on a stage set anyway,
right.
like, just fucking go for it.
Well, I think that there were a lot of, look, they're going to do this again, because
yes.
it was massive.
Huge meeting.
It was the biggest Thursday night that they had had since the finale of ER, which Lila and I both were talking earlier in the week that we would have guessed was probably, like, 10 years ago, but it was only 4 years ago, oddly enough.
Like, what was happening on ER for the past, for the six final years of ER that I
didn't
ever
know
what's happening.
I know.
Like, apparently everything.
All things. Yeah.
But it's also, I mean, they also won the night in the demo, which is the term that people use
right.
to describe 18 to 49.
Yeah.
That's the demo that everyone actually cares about.
Right. And, you know, NBC has obviously not had a good Thursday in a long time, and nobody has been able to touch the Big Bang Theory on Thursday in
right.
a long, and they basically tied Big Bang Theory.
Yeah.
So that's was
that's
it
huge.
Was huge. So they're going to do it again. I hope that there were lessons
learned
here.
One can only hope.
One would think. But yes, the live audience, like, was just so, like, there were times, like, when you go, if you're going to shoot it like a play,
right.
like, there are times in the play where,
you
like,
want
when you
laughter,
finish a big, a laughter, or, like,
cheers.
The cheers bothered me more than the laughter,
yeah.
because, like, usually you don't, like, laugh, like, you know,
uproariously
like,
the sound
like
of music.
At the sound of music. But, like, you know, when somebody finishes, like, a huge, you know, number, like, there's usually just sort of, like, rapturous applause. And,
yeah.
like, there were a few times where, like, those things ended. And then, literally, it was sort of, like, just sort of, like, either into commercial break, which
was
really awkward.
Deadening.
Or just, like, into the next scene, which was also just sort of, like, awkwardly done. Because then you just had to kind of, like,
move on.
Just, like, you know, right, exactly.
Right.
To camera, you have your arms in the air. You finish singing,
right.
singing a giant note. And then you sort of, like, turn and, like, start delivering
like, so anyway.
Your next line
right.
awkwardly. Yeah, exactly. So, there were problems.
Also questionable, their choice to use the original musical instead of the movie version.
Right.
Because it was 1 million hours long. 1 million. And that's,
yeah.
and they had to add commercial breaks. Like, the thing about doing the live musical version is that those will take 3 hours, but you have an intermission in the middle, and everything sort of, like, builds up to the intermission,
yeah, just,
and then you have the whole
it
part.
It felt long.
It felt
longer than it was.
It felt And that's saying a lot because it was 3 hours long.
Right.
So, in any case, that was the biggest television event to hit the airwaves this week and possibly one of the biggest news items.
Yeah.
And it was terrible.
Yeah. But here's to the next one.
Yeah. Me and Brent watched Grey's Anatomy instead.
We did. Well, one of... I mean, we're obsessed with Grey's Anatomy.
Yeah, as we know.
As everyone knows. But one of my good friends who I went to college with, who Lila knows as well, was on this week.
She was on.
Very exciting. So we went over to her house and we had a Grey's Anatomy viewing party.
Yeah, it was very exciting.
Yeah. Because you have to group watch that.
And you
Then you have a friend on the show and there's like eight people in the room. That's what you want.
That's,
snacks? I mean...
Yes. Yeah, some interesting snacks too, because we brought these weird crackers that involved that were made of only fig and olive, mysteriously.
Something. Nobody. I don't know.
I was eating those marshmallow and caramel chocolate things.
Trader Joe's.
They were delicious.
Delicious.
In any case, so we didn't actually have to sit through all 3 hours of The Sound of Music.
No.
But and we never will.
Nope.
Brent DVR'd it, but I was like, "Are you going to watch it?" And he was like, "Nope." Saw enough.
That's it.
So in any case, that's the news of the week.
That's it.
Next week, there will either be news or not, but we'll still be here.
Wow.
So you can
trust
that we'll have some thoughts on things.
It wasn't this week, and we still managed to eke an hour out of it.
Exactly.
So. Lila and I often joke about how we're sort of just like, one, we magically know how long an hour is, which we should be commended for.
Obviously.
You should commend us for that. And also, if we only had two news stories on here, we would just talk for an hour, and we would be done, and we'd be like, oh, look, we talked for an hour about Nelson Mandela dying.
Exactly.
I mean, like, had
we
that been literally the only thing that happened this week, we would have done it, and you would have liked it.
Yeah, exactly. So in any case, tune in next week, where we'll maybe tell you about how our company Christmas parties went, because that's coming up.
Yeah, that's happening.
That's always interesting.
Mm,
And, you know, don't feel like you have to watch The Sound of Music just because it happened.
No.
Don't. That ship has sailed.
Do feel like you have to donate to us, though.
Yes, do feel that way. That's a great way to spend your holiday season thinking about things.
Yeah.
And we promise...
Donating to us is like a gift to humanity.
Yeah, basically.
Yeah.
A gift to everyone.
Yeah.
It's like you're giving a gift to America and the world.
Mm-hmm.
So tune in next week. Also, if you have a moment, why not just like rate us and leave a comment on iTunes?
Yeah.
People aren't doing that enough, but you could be doing that.
Yeah.
We would really appreciate it.
Thank you.
And maybe we'll thank you on the podcast if you do.
Yeah.
Could get your name said on the podcast.
Yeah. We're up to that.
Have a good week.
Bye.
Bye.